Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, they reported this. Whoever's responsible for this, I forget. It may have been the Centers for Disease Control, who control no diseases. No, they got rid of the that swine flu went away. Anyway, they reported this week that this is the worst allergy season ever, E-V-A-H, ever, or at least in modern evas. And, you know, it just, and I'm here in New Orleans where it's, I guess it's bad. It's bad for me. And it just strikes me, okay, flu season followed by allergy season. Maybe this whole breathing passages thing was a mistake. Maybe, you know, we're only supposed to breathe the other 6 months of the year and save the oxygen like nuts for these difficult times. I don't know. Just thinking about it and then stopping to think about it, stopping thinking about it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not number one. Again, it's a trend. It's a happening thing. This week's factoid comes from the Heritage Foundation. Yes, they're a conservative outfit. You got a problem with that? They can't get a job in show business because of that. So they sit in Washington, churn out this stuff. The Heritage Foundation reported this week that the United States is not number one in economic freedom. I know. There's that small business you were going to start. We are number eight. Number one, of course, is Singapore. You can't spit on the sidewalk, but, you know, you've got economic freedom. And, you, by the way, you can't imply that the prime minister got his job from his father, not through merit, but you got economic freedom in Singapore. But my point, ladies and gentlemen, and I will not be deterred, is that aside from Singapore, five of the seven countries in front of us, and by behind I mean in front, five of the seven countries in front of us in the list of countries with the most economic freedom, that those five include, this just to give you a clue here, Switzerland and Canada. You getting the drift here? Five of the seven countries with more economic freedom than we do, according to the Heritage Foundation, have government health care. Isn't that nutty? That's a wild thing. That is so nutty. And, ladies and gentlemen, that is a fact I shared with folks on Twitter this week. When I mention at the end of the show each week that I'm on Twitter, I feel duty bound to point out, no, I do not write, my tweets do not consist of, yeah, I'm going to the bathroom now. That was a good one. It's just, it's not those kind of tweets. I tweet about stuff in the news, like the Heritage Foundation report, and shameless self-promotion. So if you'd like to help in the shameless self-promotion of The Big Uneasy or any other projects I have, sign up, follow me, retweet, do the whole thing. Do the whole tweet thing. Come on. It's almost fun. Ladies and gentlemen, our friend Pakistan. You know, they're such good friends. I'd almost want to borrow money from them. They're such good friends. Here's what they're up to now. Officials, and we're just becoming aware of this, officials from Iran and Pakistan signed an agreement last month for a long-delayed project to ship gas from the giant gas field in the Persian Gulf, controlled by Iran, to Pakistan. You see what I'm saying? The long-delayed project called Peace Pipeline. Yeah, smoke that peace pipeline. Once included India in the original plans. Washington opposes the project because of the economic incentive for Iran. It didn't stop Pakistan from signing it. The U.S. government advised Pakistan to seek other alternatives, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Robert Blake. And he denied he left the gun in the restaurant. But at no point in time did Washington officially call on Pakistan to back off from the project because they realized Pakistan's energy constraints. Pakistan officials said there's only 9 hours of electricity per day in parts of Pakistan. Well, during the daylight hours, you just got the sun. Pakistan gets roughly half its energy needs from natural gas, and domestic reserves are in decline, so it's getting its gas from Iran. You getting the picture? Ladies and gentlemen, Pope Benedict the 16th is willing to meet with more victims of priestly abuse, according to the Vatican's latest word on the subject. Bring a chaperone. My only advice. You know, Benedict has met with such victims in the past, most in the U.S., but has yet to do so since the new allegations of abuse began emerging in Europe. Bring a chaperone, won't you? But it's not just the Catholic Church. Youth swimming coaches, many certified by USA Swimming, the national governing body of, yes, swimming, have been able to molest young swimmers and then move from town to town, escaping criminal charges and continuing to victimize other underage swimmers. This is according to an ESPN report. The abusive coaches, some of whom molested young swimmers for more than 30 years, well, they're not young anymore by that. Oh, I see what you're saying. Avoided detection because of a number of factors. USA Swimming and other organizations had inadequate oversight. Many local coaches, parents, and swimming officials failed to report inappropriate contact they witnessed. And some parents, driven to see their children succeed, ignored or did not recognize what should have been red flags. I said flags. It reminds me, ladies and gentlemen, of when I was in high school and took a swimming class. And my swimming teacher, and I'm going to mention him by name because he's probably either deceased or become a priest by now, Mr. Bobinette, decided that in our class, a boys' swimming class, we should participate sans trunks for hygienic reasons, he explained. Because, you know, those filthy old trunks are such germ sinks. So, yes, USA Swimming, carry on. Hello, welcome to the show. And they do carry on.
I'm gonna make my own paycheck. I will not steal and I will not rob. But I don't like baloney, and I don't speak Japanese. Uh-oh. I don't like baloney, and I don't speak Japanese. When you make my macaroni, I want you to make it with that government cheese.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. Just a random consonant there. Don't worry about it. It's been disposed of properly. It's being recycled. Oh, yes, I am reading the trades for you. From Aviation Week. Missile defense test failure, result of two problems. I'll read it for you. Yes, missile defense. I feel safer already just saying those two words. Two unrelated factors contributed to the failure of a U.S. Missile Defense Agency ground-based interceptor, the well-known GBI, to destroy its target during a January 31 flight test. This is what Aviation Week has learned from multiple officials in the missile defense program. The first problem, known in the rocket sector as chuffing, occurred as the target boosted from the Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands around 3:40 in the afternoon. Chuffing refers to the sound that the motor makes, but it's also used to describe changes in the burn rate or pressure burning in the solid rocket fuel that propels a booster, in this case, the target. Chuffing is common in rocket motors, particularly in older boosters. The target here used Trident C4 boosters, some of which are 25 to 35 years in age. That would be the target demographic if they were people, but they're not. So there's chuffing. You Brits, stop giggling. The missile defense officials agree that the target performed as required by the Missile Defense Agency for the test, and that the chuffing was within normal expectations. While the chuffing did not affect target performance, a problem arose when the primary sensor for the test, the massive sea-based X-band radar, managed by Boeing, had difficulty reading what missile defense officials called the threat scene. This includes the rocket body, nose cone, countermeasures, warhead, and any other objects that may be within view of the sea-based X-band radar during the test. Algorithms designed to help SBX filter out chuffing were not engaged during the test, according to one official. Thus, the threat scene that the radar viewed was more complex than it should have been. In a real engagement, this official says, the algorithms would be engaged, and the radar would not have encountered such an unfamiliar threat scene. All right, I'm taking that to the bank.
The bank's closed. What the hell happened here?
According to a missile defense statement issued shortly after the failed flight test, the ground-based interceptor and target both performed nominally, but the sea-based X-band radar did not perform as expected. Missile defense officials declined to outline further detail at that time. A failure review board is sifting through the test data to discover the causes, and missile defense officials still will not directly discuss the findings. The second problem contributing to the test failure involved the functioning of the exo-atmosphere kill vehicle itself. You know, the EKV. The EKV apparently experienced a mechanical failure in a thruster. I know the feeling, babe. This was described by one of the officials as a quality control issue brought on by a faulty connector. The head of the Missile Defense Agency, Lieutenant General Patrick O'Reilly, has complained repeatedly before and after this test about the pitfalls of connectors on missile defense elements that require highly precise performance. And what a drag that is. Though the EKV failed to destroy the target in this case, the results of this portion of the test do not point to an inherent defect in the missile defense system or architecture. Officials found that while the EKV was operating on incomplete data from the radar, which was confused by the threat scene, the onboard sensor managed to pick out the warhead, the actual target, from the threat scene. The rocket didn't demolish the target, but picked it out okay. You're reassured, right? Because I know I am. Make sure you can properly identify your threat scene, ladies and gentlemen. Good advice from me when I read the trades from you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now it's clean, it's safe, it's too cheap to meter. It's nuclear power. Dateline Chicago, an otherwise garden variety workplace dispute, has posed a larger question at the nearby Byron Nuclear Generation Station. It's 80 miles west of the Windy City. It's close enough. Close enough for argument. The issue in question is, how adequately are security guards trained and equipped to protect nuclear power plants? Just that little question, you know, trifling little inquiry. The question is raised by a complaint brought before a federal administrative judge by Matt Simon, a former guard and weapons trainer at the Byron facility, who is asking the court to decide between two explanations for why he no longer works there. Was he an incompetent employee who falsified weapons logs, as claimed by Exelon?
Yes, Exelon.
Which operates Byron, or was he fired a year ago for trying to alert his superiors to security lapses at the plant, as he asserts, in what his attorneys characterize as a whistleblower suit? Those are fashionable now. Simon alleges there was a consistent policy of dumbing down security, training, and certifying unqualified guards. He says rifles and other equipment failed, although they could pick out the target. He says plant officials filed false security reports with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and that his firing resulted directly from his speaking out. Exelon operates 10 nuclear plants, 6 of them in Illinois. It says it dismissed Simon's allegation after investigating and finding them unfounded. We'll, I'm sure, hear more about that. But meanwhile, more tritium. If you're thinking there's not enough tritium leaks going on, if you're saying, where's the tritium? Where's more tritium? Here's the answer. A radioactive isotope was found this week in two storm drain catch basins at the Salem 2 nuclear plant in Lower Alloways Creek Township, New Jersey. There's tritium in Jersey. Who knew? You just have to go over. Yeah, but you have to go over to Jersey. Tritium, a carcinogen and byproduct of nuclear fission, was detected this week at 1.1 million picocuries per liter. In the basins, the federal safety standard for drinking water is a mere 20,000 picocuries. You do the math. I'll wait. No, I won't. The plant's owner, reported the findings to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission the next day. NRC reporting criteria were reviewed, and although no direct reportable criteria were met based on the public sensitivity to tritium, it was determined that a voluntary notification to the NRC was prudent, says the Salem plant management. No traces of tritium were found in samples taken upstream of the river outfall, the company told the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The discovery marks the third time in 2 years that tritium was found leaking from a New Jersey nuclear power plant. It's Jersey. I'm telling you. It's not nuclear. It's Jersey. Oyster Creek Generating Station in Lacey Township reported 2 tritium leaks last year. That plant's leaks prompted a nationwide probe that found that tritium had escaped into the groundwater at 27 of the nation's 104 nuclear power plants, including a leak years ago at Salem. Nuclear plants typically inform the NRC of tritium leaks tested at 30,000 picocuries or greater if contaminated water gets into the groundwater, says the NRC. Don't drink the water in Jersey. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission itself has called a special meeting this coming week to discuss 3 apparent violations involving a spent fuel pool. Hey, summer's coming. Let's all get into the spent fuel pool at Turkey Point, Florida. That's a critical issue as the long-held plans for storing waste at Yucca Mountain, of course, collapsed. Technically, the meeting in Atlanta involves the degradation of a neutron-absorbing material called Boraflex in the Unit 3 spent fuel pool. Used nuclear fuel has been building up at Turkey Point for the 35 years of its operation. The degradation involves systems intended to cram more spent fuel into the pools, according to a former NRC inspector. More than 2 million pounds of waste now sit at the South Miami site in pools of water. For years, the federal government planned to move it to Yucca Mountain, but that's not happening now. The NRC's issue is compliance with its standards not related to safety. The problem involved 2 cells out of 1,400 Boraflex panels, which have been placed in the pools to absorb neutrons and reduce the radioactive process. Says the former NRC inspector, the pools were never designed to hold this much fuel to start with. Using the panels and inserting boron into the water are intended to absorb neutrons to prevent the nuclear rods from going critical. You don't want criticality in a fuel pool. That would be disastrous, says the ex-NRC inspector. All right. All you folks with fuel pools in your backyard, that's good advice. And the Regulatory Commission says it will increase inspections at the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant following the recent tritium leaks there and misstatements by Yankee executives to state officials. A state panel overseeing the plant says it will report next month that 8 failures in plant systems led to the leaks of tritium, cesium-137, and other radioactive substances. The NRC's memo explains why it wants to intensify the normal level of regulation. Officials say such memos are rare. Only 17 have been issued to the nation's commercial reactors since 2000. In the memo, the NRC says the enhanced inspections were less a result of problems at the plant than of public concern. That's right. If I hadn't told you about this stuff, we wouldn't need to inspect it. It's not me. It's the media in Vermont I blame. The plant's performance has not crossed any specific thresholds mandating additional regulatory oversight, says the NRC's regional coordinator. The staff has not identified a hazard to public health or safety from the leaks of the radioactive materials. So go about your business, ladies and gentlemen. They're just going to have more inspections because you're concerned. And your concern is a concern to them. You see what I'm saying? It's some sort of chain. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Worthing, England. A British mayor has apologized to a class of 11-year-olds for falling asleep during a performance of their school musical. Parents and students at Vale First and Middle School in Worthing, England, were in tears. Tears, I say. During the intermission, after the guests of honor at their performance of Bugsy Malone, Mayor Noel Atkins and his wife, Helena, fell asleep just a few minutes into the play. Atkins had been fighting a cold, he says, and his wife had been prescribed medication that made her drowsy on the evening of the play. I would like to apologize if I've upset any of the children. A reviving cup of coffee did work wonders, and we were pleased to meet and chat with the children during the interval and enjoy their performance of Bugsy. No chuffing was spotted at the event. In a letter to the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Associate Dean of the University of California School of Law, Goodwin Liu, a nominee to the U.S. Court of Appeals, apologized for dozens of omissions from his Senate questionnaire. "The original submission of my Senate questionnaire inadvertently admitted a number of items," Liu wrote to Senator Pat Leahy. "I would like to offer a sincere and personal apology to you, to the ranking member, Republican Senator Jeff Sessions, and to the entire committee for the omissions in my original submission. None of the omissions in my original submission was intentional," he says. "And I'd made a good faith effort to track down all of my publications and speeches over the years." The explanation was not received warmly by the Republicans on the panel, usually known for their warmth. Toyota Motor Company, the world's biggest automaker. I don't think you want to be that. I don't think you want to be the number one automaker. Bad things happen. Anyway, they recalled 12,384 cars in South Korea because of floor mats that can cause gas pedals to stick, adding to global recalls of more than 8 million vehicles. Toyota Motor Korea Company's chief executive officer, Hisao Nakabayashi, apologized to customers, saying he's deeply sorry. Toyota only began selling its flagship brand in South Korea in October, may revise its sales target in the nation following the recalls. I'm guessing downward. That's just, I have these, call them psychic emanations from time to time. Deadline Wellington, New Zealand. The Catholic Archbishop of Wellington, John Dew, D-E-W, ladies and gentlemen, because all names are funny, said this week he had apologized to church members for the humiliation, embarrassment, and disappointment resulting from continuing reports of child abuse by priests in several countries. "I think as more revelations come to light and people hear that, it's put the church in a crisis," he told Radio New Zealand. "I'm sorry for that." Dew said the situation had been made even worse as church members heard the cases may have been mishandled. "That's why I wanted to say something to the people. I really wanted to assure our people in the Diocese of Wellington that we're all saddened by what has happened, that we weren't sweeping it under the carpet, that we all join in the sadness and the hurt, and let's look for ways to move on." Very strict protocols have been put in place in New Zealand, and we do everything we can to collaborate with civil authorities. He told Radio New Zealand there were hundreds, if not... Oh, sorry. A spokesman for the Male Survivors of Sexual Abuse Trust, Ken Clearwater, told Radio New Zealand there were hundreds, if not thousands, of victims in New Zealand. And that's not counting the swimmers. Boy, to be a Catholic swimmer, The double whammy. Deadline Taipei, Taiwan's health minister has apologized for asking single men and women to pay higher insurance premiums because they're more inclined to have mental or other problems. Authorities have tried to cut Taiwan's widening health insurance deficit. Yang Chi Liang's comments earlier this week stirred an outcry, especially among many single members of the parliament. He said he may have been less sensitive about the singles, but refused to back away from the proposed hikes for them. He says the hikes may encourage more people to get married. On average, women marry at the age of 28 and men at 30 in Taiwan. So that would be the single bar capital of the world, I would think. Don't all flock now. Come on, stick around. There's more show. Deadline Anchorage, a priest who was involved in the canonical trial of a priest accused of abusing deaf children decades ago, has admitted he made a mistake when he said then-Milwaukee Archbishop Rembert G. Weakland never told him to halt the trial. Father Thomas Brundage, who was presiding judge in the trial against Father Lawrence Murphy, said he recently was reminded of a letter he drafted in which Archbishop Weakland advised the Vatican he had instructed Father Brundage to formally abate the case. "I had not seen that letter in nearly 12 years, wrote Father Brundage, now in the Archdiocese of Anchorage. "In all honesty, I do not remember the memo, but I do admit to being wrong on the issue, and I apologize for my mistake." 200 deaf boys, ladies and gentlemen. Texas State Representative Norma Chavez apologized this week for outing her political challenger, Democrat and assistant El Paso County Attorney Naomi Gonzalez, but the apology may be too little too late for many in her camp. Chavez admitted her statement should have no bearing on a political campaign, said she regrets her public speculation of her challenger's sexual orientation. The British military has apologized for offending a Muslim group by using structures resembling mosques at a target range. The military said it did not intend for the structures to look like mosques. Well, it's easy to build something that looks like a mosque. Come on. That can happen to anybody. There are sheds. Everybody's got sheds behind their house that look like mosques. You know that. And the British military said the structures were not actually being fired on. In any case. The Bradford Council for Mosques is calling for the immediate removal of the structures at the firing range. The group's chief executive, Mohammed Salim Khan, says it's obvious the structures look like mosques. Military officials say they want to meet with the Muslim group to explain that no offense was intended. They have not said whether the structures will be removed. Just put a cross on top of them. It'd be obvious they're not mosques. Is that too simple? Dateline Washington, two former top Citigroup executives apologized this week for the financial crisis and the $45 billion public bailout needed to save the banking giant from collapse. Democrats and Republicans ripped the executives for not taking responsibility for the company's dramatic fall in the nation's fiscal morass. I'm sorry that the financial crisis has had such a devastating impact on our country. I'm sorry for the millions of people, average Americans, who've lost their homes, says Charles Chuck Prince, Citigroup's chief executive from 2003 to 2007. And I'm sorry that our management team, starting with me, like so many others, could not see the unprecedented market collapse that lay before us, he said. Almost all of us in the financial system missed the powerful combination of forces at work and the serious possibility of a massive crisis, said Robert Rubin, former Citigroup chairman. We all bear responsibility for not recognizing this, and I deeply regret that. That's a cheeseball apology, babe. Rewrite. Go see Rewrite. Dateline, Richmond, Virginia. No, not yet. First. Well, yeah, might as well. What the hell? Dateline, Richmond, Virginia. Governor Bob McDonnell has conceded a major omission for not noting the existence of slavery when he declared April Confederate History Month in Virginia. As part of his mea culpa, McDonnell inserted into the proclamation a paragraph condemning slavery as evil and inhumane and blaming it as the cause of the Civil War.
You mean the War of Northern Aggression?
In a 400-word statement issued by his office, McDonnell said the failure to include a slavery reference was a mistake and apologized to any Virginian who might have been offended or disappointed. He had earlier said in a telephone news conference that he wasn't focused on slavery in drafting the decree, but on Civil War history. More Civil War battles were fought in Virginia than any other state. Richmond just happened to be the capital of the Confederacy. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Southland, land of cotton and loam. Losers got to have a place to call home. Secession, well, it's the source of our pride, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. Oh, the stars and bars will never be forgot. On our state flag, the X marks the spot. It took bravery to fight for slavery. That's how we're inclined, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Always left behind, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Jackson, it's Anglo-Saxon no more. Macon, you be shaken when you go to the store. Throughout our states, there is this deep divide, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. Oh, the stars and bars will never be forgot. We're Johnny Reb and not some hottentot. It took bravery to fight for slavery. You can't be colorblind when you're with the losing kind. This ain't what we designed, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Oh, we love our flag. Says just who we are. We got no fancy house, we got no fancy car. It takes bravery to forget about slavery. We don't watch, we rewind, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Surrenders what we sign, 'cause we're
you lost, babe. You know, you want to fight it again, okay, but you lost. Put it away. And I don't believe Germany is celebrating Nazi Heritage Month, but I may be misinformed on that. So anyway, this is Le Show, ladies and gentlemen. And now, news from outside the bubble. All right, start with this from the Times of London, soon to be behind a paywall. You'll have to pay me to read this in the future. George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld covered up the fact that hundreds of innocent men were sent to the Guantanamo Bay prison camp because they feared that releasing them would harm the push for war in Iraq and the broader war on terror, according to a new document obtained by the Times of London. The accusations were made by Lawrence Wilkerson, a top aide to Colin Powell, former Secretary of State, in a signed declaration to support a lawsuit filed by a Guantanamo detainee. It's the first time such allegations have been made by a former senior member of the Bush administration. Colonel Wilkerson was Powell's chief of staff, was most critical of Cheney and Rumsfeld. He claimed that the former vice president and defense secretary knew that the majority of the initial 742 detainees at Gitmo were innocent, but believed it was politically impossible to release them. Powell is understood to have backed Colonel Wilkerson's declaration. He claims the majority of detainees, children as young as 12 and men as old as 93, never saw a U.S. soldier when they were captured. Many were turned over by Afghans and Pakistanis for up to $5,000 bounty. Little or no evidence was produced as to why they'd been taken. He also said one reason Cheney and Rumsfeld did not want the innocent detainees released was because, quote, the detention efforts would be revealed as the incredibly confused operation that they were. This was not acceptable to the administration and would have been severely detrimental to the leadership at the Defense Department, unquote. Referring to Cheney, Colonel Wilkerson said, quote, he had absolutely no concern that the vast majority of Guantanamo detainees were innocent. If hundreds of innocent individuals had to suffer in order to detain a handful of hardcore terrorists, so be it, unquote. But wait, there's more. Also from the Times of London, the head of the Roman Catholic Church in England and Wales presided over a child protection system that allowed a pedophile priest to continue abusing schoolboys despite repeated complaints from victims, according to an investigation by the Times. The Archbishop of Westminster, the Most Reverend Vincent Nichols, chaired the church's child safety watchdog in 2002-2008, while Father David Pierce was repeatedly investigated by church officials and police. Despite a high court ruling in 2006 awarding damages to one of his victims, Pierce remained a priest in West London, where he groomed and assaulted one final victim before his arrest in 2008. Archbishop Nichol denied any knowledge of the Pierce case while he was chairman of the Catholic Office for the Protection of Children. Nice that they have that office, though. It's reassuring, like missile defense. There is strong evidence of a cover-up in NATO's handling of an incident in Afghanistan where U.S. special forces killed a number of civilians, including two pregnant women. The killings happened on February the 12th in a village outside Gardez in eastern Afghanistan. The facts only started becoming unearthed because of investigative reporting by the British journalist Jerome Starkey, published in the London Times, owned by Rupert Murdoch. NATO's own statements about the incident first suggested the women had been killed well before the special forces got there. But Afghan police investigation reveals that not only were the women killed by the same bullets that killed the same kind of bullets that killed the men in the house, a prosecutor and a policeman. The Afghan police investigation also revealed that there was evidence of the bullets in both the bodies, pardon me, and the house, the walls of the house, being dug out, presumably by the American Special Forces troops involved in the incident. News from outside the bubble. Why would that not be getting? Oh, I know. Tiger's playing. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, it's tough to figure out what's going on here with our friend, Mr. At the head of the AFPAT situation. AFPAT! The week began with angry President Karzai of Afghanistan. And complaining that the people who were responsible for the fraud in the presidential election that Karzai won were the outsiders. Karzai's remarks, said one official, one Afghan official, really shocked me. It scared me. We should not take this lightly. Then, on Wednesday, the White House offered fresh signals of its displeasure with Afghan President Karzai, hinting it might cancel his Washington meeting with President Obama next month. But by Friday, according to the New York Times, U.S. now trying a softer approach toward President Karzai. I know, it all sounds very exotic, but it's really quite normal.
Father knows best.
So we'll put the soup bowls where, Miss Janet?
We'll put them where we always do, Madam First Lady. Oh,
of course. Best place for them. I was just thinking out of the box for a moment.
Oh, they're definitely coming out of the box, Madam First Lady.
Oh, good. Good.
So, Rum.
Yes, sir.
Tell them again, we'll let them drill off the coast or not, whatever will get the senator's vote.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo needs to take care of his affairs.
Yes, sir.
Hi, honey. Hello, Miss Janet. Oh, sure hope we're putting those fancy dishes away.
Uh-oh. Sounds like he's thinking inside the box.
Honey, I know you're multitasking up the wazoo, but well, I know you didn't forget. We're rehearsing for President Karzai's dinner. It's only...
It's only not happening.
Did he upset you again? Or did you upset him again?
Miss Janet, why don't you take an early 10?
Yes, sir.
Honey, this guy's an unreliable partner. You know, I'm beginning to regret ever deciding to go into business with him.
And, honey, you knew that when we first invited him, way back last month. You know, right before we started on a month's worth of preparations. I mean, I know it's her job and everything, but Miss Janet's gonna take an early 10 hours when she hears this.
Can't help it. Have to send the guy a message that he's not welcome at the same table with Kitten and Princess. I mean, you heard he may have a problem being dependent on his country's main export, which his brother controls.
Okay, well, how about this? You cut out the middleman and give him his brother's phone number. And then he comes to the dinner.
Right, and just after the seventh toast, he starts being a little, you know, unhelpful. Well, thank you, Mr. President. A lovely toast. My daughters are very grateful for your kind words.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Oh, thank you, young ladies. You know, I didn't recognize you without your burkas. You are going to school, aren't you? Still? But, no, I tell you, sir, you've got a fine team here.
Well,
Ambassador Holbrooke, he's sitting over there going, what's the matter with Karzai? Why doesn't he call me? And General Jones, how are you, sir? Yes, nice to see you. He's sitting over there going, somebody shut up the Afghan. But no, I kid the fine general that it must hurt to have to buy your uniforms at the big and fat store. No, I'm not forgetting you, Mrs. Clinton. Well, no, she's over there telling her BlackBerry, find Bill, find Bill. But seriously, I can't tell you how grateful I am to all of you. Well, mainly because I'm not. Oh. You call that an army? I'm serious. Who enlisted all the Schwarzes? No, I kid the fine African-American contingent. But, you know...
The toast turns into a roast, and before you know it, somebody's country ends up running out of the room crying.
Not me. I'd pay $50 to sit ringside.
Well, he's disinvited. That's final. Now...
Daddy, they're at it again. Justin in Sacramento class says you've sold out your principles.
Oh, that's okay, Princess. What did you tell him?
I told him you were always a pragmatic centrist, mm-hmm. but he just laughed at me. And then I said you only approved oil drilling in certain areas to win the votes of senators in those areas for the climate change bill, not because you're too little oil companies. Mm-hmm. Then he started yelling, offshore dealing, and then discussion time was over.
Oh, sweetheart, I know it's rough to be my daughter. Hey, sometimes it's hard just being me.
And sometimes it's hard just being married to him.
But, Pumpkin, sometimes you've got to be willing to agree to appear to change your mind a little bit to get what you really want.
That, well, that's right, Princess. Like, we really want your daddy's partner in Afghanistan to start cleaning up his act. So we change our mind about inviting him to dinner to make him feel grateful for something.
You know what, Princess?
What, Daddy?
Much as I hate to say it, your mom's right. Now, that's a change of mind I can believe in.
So, dish is coming back out. Miss Janet coming back in.
Come on, Princess. Help me brush up on my Pashtun chit-chat.
Say you wonder why folks have to hate and hurt one another. Why they can't stay even, Stephen, and live brother to brother. You can wonder in one hand and spit in the other. Cause baby, you don't really wanna know. How come there's always plenty money for some bullets and some bombs, but there's never enough for some nurses or some teachers or some moms? Ain't it cheaper filling Frigidaires than filling up tombs? You don't really want to know. Watch the world through the windshield of a gasmobile. Only stop to scrape away the bugs that down it. You don't know or care what's changing hands underneath the table. Just as long as it's got plenty apple pie on it. How come terrorists and Texas T-boys share the same last name? Power brokers play with politics
like some petty private game. And no matter who you vote for, who you get is just the same. Oh, baby, you don't really want to know. Different way from how they always go. Do the haves just have to keep on reaping everything the have-nots sow? Will creature comfort say so long when conscience says hello? Well, honey, you don't really want to know. You know I hate to be the one to say I told you so. But baby, you don't really want to know.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is New Orleans, Louisiana, and it is the answer this week to the question, what do I have in common with Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich? We're all here. I'm here for residential and professional reasons. They're here because the Republican Southern Republican Leadership Conference was having its big, I think pep rally. Pep. That's what they were demonstrating. Pep. It was peppy. It was mucho pep at the event. And Sarah Palin spoke, I think, Friday. And got a rousing welcome, and it led to an awful lot of speculation, which was dampened on Saturday. And the Southern Republicans returned to their Republican roots, i.e. the Republican Party, when it comes to the question of presidential nominations, is much like a Jewish bakery. Take a number and wait your turn. Their number one pick in their straw poll for the presidential nominee in 2012 wasn't Sarah Palin.
Wasn't even Newt Gingrich.
It was Mitt Romney. You know, because it was his turn. So despite the rousing welcome she got at this event, if Sarah Palin does have presidential ambitions, it began to appear this weekend that this current round of speechifying may just be, to coin a phrase, another bridge to nowhere.
When I'm asleep, you're in every dream. But can you be as grand as you seem? You span the miles. Why, I really don't know. You promise a journey, but where do you go?
Bridge to nowhere.
I'm under your spell. If you were a tunnel, in your walls I would dwell. Please set me free. Oh, how I wonder how you feel about me. First, I loved you. I thought you could help cut short my commute to the moose and the elk. But you became a notorious curse. My dreams are driving right into reverse. You're under my skin when my world is at stake. Forsaking you is no sin. Just leave me alone. We'll keep the money, honey. You're on your own.
To the bridge.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. On NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.4 and 5 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like wearing your Speedo to the meeting with the Pope. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in Exile, and Hawaii desks, and to Judith Owen as the voice of Sarah Palin. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of music heard here on, part of what's in store for you at harryshearer.com. And this program is on Twitter at LeTwits. Don't remember what I... At LeTwits. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.